This is Trepwire Week in Review for week ending June 3rd, 2022. I'm Martha Kocher with Trep, a data modeling and analytics firm for the CMBS, commercial real estate, and CLO markets. I'm with Manus Clancy, Senior Managing Director, and Lonnie Hendry, Head of CRE and Advisory Services. This week, bearish comments from JP Morgan's Jamie Dimon as investors digest a fresh round of economic data pointing to a tight labor market and persistent inflation. April manufacturing activity unexpectedly grew. Private payrolls last month had the lowest gains since the pandemic started. Last month's home prices were 20% higher than March, and mortgage demand fell to the lowest level since 2018. Manus, we've seen choppiness in the markets as worries about uncertainty seem to continue. And the worry is that the Fed's not going to be able to get in front of this inflation problem.
Well, the week started out pretty well, didn't it? Right? Or at least it ended last week great since we did our last podcast. Saw several days of really powerful rallies late last week. Over the weekend, we did see one of the Fed governors come out and say the Fed would take a very aggressive posture in fighting inflation. That seemed to taper down some of the enthusiasm from earlier this week. I was watching CNBC this morning. It appears that there's almost unanimity. I think it's in the high 90% range that we will see 50 basis point rate hikes this month and next month, so 100 basis points in total by the end of July. And then I think they're handicapping a 67% likelihood of another 50 basis points in August. So the Fed certainly seems to be talking a game which says we're going to wrestle this to the ground. Janet Yellen yesterday, Treasury Secretary, said that the Fed had underestimated the stickiness of inflation. So it does seem like those in Washington are taking this seriously. On the economic data front, we did see some positive prints. Chicago PMI earlier this week, better than expected. National PMI a day later, also better than expected. But this morning, Thursday morning, June 2nd, a wave of negative data, right? Disappointing ADP jobs, higher wages, higher payroll costs. And then just shortly before we came on air, which I will footnote in a moment, Microsoft lowered their Q4 forecast. So some good news, some bad news in there. The market seems to be reacting accordingly with neither surges this week nor huge sell-offs. And I think that's appropriate for a market that is very much in flux.
Yeah, it was interesting, Manus. Martha alluded to this on the intro. Jamie Dimon put on his meteorologist hat this week and was quoted as saying investors should prepare for an economic hurricane. We don't know if it's a minor one or Superstorm Sandy. You better brace yourself. So it was interesting. He's, you know, we've talked about this last couple of months that he's kind of been straddling the fence a little bit. Some days he's a little more optimistic, some days pessimistic, but came out pretty strong this week with what he sees as potential challenges based on tightening monetary policy, Russia's invasion of Ukraine, et cetera, et cetera. We did see, though, on MarketWatch, CNBC, there was another JP Morgan analyst. This is a quantitative analyst on Wall Street, indicated yesterday that stocks could see a torrid rebound during the latter half of 2022. So it seems like there's a little bit of a difference of opinion on maybe where we're at. James Bullard, we've talked about him, St. Louis Fed Reserve Bank president, still saying that the macroeconomic situation is straining the Fed's credibility with respect to its inflation target. He's adamant, was at a presentation in Memphis on Wednesday, that the Fed has to follow through to ratify the forward guidance. You know, he wants to see rates get to 3.5% by the end of the year. And then one more, you know, noteworthy bullet to just put out is the home price situation. So Case-Shiller, the CoreLogic Case-Shiller Home Price Index, showed this last month, home prices were 20.6% higher than they were in March. On their 10-city composite, they saw an increase of 19.5%. The 20-city composite saw 21.2% year-over-year gain. So, you know, everyone that's been waiting for some sort of deceleration in home prices are still going to have to wait a little bit longer. The data here shows, even with falling mortgage demand, and we've seen a lot of layoffs in the mortgage space, prices are still on the increase. So again, a lot of, you know, macroeconomic news that maybe don't bode well for, you know, the immediate short-term economy, but, you know, probably needed for this longer-term reset that I think that we've been talking about for some time.
Now, going back to Jamie Dimon's comments, the one piece of data that really jumped out at me, or the one remark in his comments, was his belief that oil could hit $175 a barrel, which would be really a kick in the shins to this economy. You always wonder when you hear, you know, leaders speak, economic leaders, bank CEOs, cabinet members, and so forth, and you're trying to look beneath the surface. You know, in the case of the Fed governor who got very hawkish over the weekend, right, I always think that that is preparing the market for the castor oil that we've talked about in the past. When I see Treasury Secretary Yellen come out and talk about missing the boat on inflation, I think, you know, she's falling on her sword for the administration, right? She wants to immunize the White House from having any culpability for what has happened over the last year heading into this election season. Noble for her, you know, she's a team player in that regard, but that's how I look at that. When you look at Jamie Dimon, you just wonder, what does he know that we don't know, right? Is he thinking things are going to be bad, but if I over-concern people, but also overperform 3 months from now, I look like a hero. So I'm setting the tone from this. Or is it something more malignant, right? Does he see something out there, whether it's a food shortage, the impact of the sanctions on Russia, or something else that we don't know yet? And that's, to use Donald Rumsfeld's famous term, the unknown unknown at the moment.
Turning to CNBC News, let's start with some things regarding the primary market news that you've wanted to cover.
So yes, I did say we would do a programming footnote before we got into more stuff. I should point out that this is the earliest we've ever recorded a podcast. You know, Lonnie is still in his pajamas out in Texas. And those Winnie the Poohs are just lovely that you that you donned. We've joked about it in the past. Normally, we are a Thursday after the market close podcast rhythm. This week, we did it right after the jobs report that came out this morning in the Microsoft news. So if this is low energy Martha or low energy Manus or low energy Lonnie, that will be our explanation. So we'll caveat the podcast that way. So let's start with the primary market. We'll talk about a lot of data points here. We try to do this at least once a quarter as to where the markets have gone. And let me start with a couple of headlines and we'll get into some real data points. Bloomberg had a piece this week which talked about how the issuers of the huge $3 billion cosmopolitan CMBS issue have had to really sweeten the terms of that deal to get people interested. When we use the term sweeten, the bond offering terms, what we're talking about is widening spreads to get people interested. This was pointed out to me by long-term and long-time Twitter communicator, Donut Shorts. He showed me the article in the first place. But the really interesting thing is down the curve at the triple B minus level, over the last 3 weeks, they've had to push out spreads about 90 basis points to get people attracted to this issue. And I think that's of a piece. Later, we saw a secondary piece. It was Commercial Mortgage Alert, talking about how in the conduit space, spreads have really had to widen to keep investors coming to the table. And they were saying that that was really up and down, the credit stack. Look to Commercial Mortgage Alert for that story. But here's some real data points. I try to look at deals of the same shelf from the same issuer. And here we're talking about the Bank of America shelf, which is known as BANK, the bank series. Their most recent spreads on a deal that priced the third week of May, the long AAA bond sold at 158 basis points over the swap curve. The last deal to price from that same series about a month earlier, 125 basis points over the curve. So 30 basis points of widening at the AAA level. When you look down the curve, AA's 240 versus 170. So we're talking about 70 basis points of widening at the single A level, 295 versus 210. So over a month, we're seeing 30 basis points at the AAA level, 70 at the AA, and almost 90 at the single A level. So that's real widening. And when you add that widening on top of serious increase in rates over the last year, you're now talking about rates in the 5% level to get people to invest in your double A and single A classes.
Yeah, Manus, have we seen this in other scenarios? Is this something that's unique based on just the conditions that we're facing today? Or have we seen this in other markets where there's been some sort of uncertainty or disruption?
Well, I would say that this is the first time we've seen something that is inflation-driven in two decades. We have seen extraordinary spread widening during the Great Financial Crisis. That was the mother of all widening, where we saw AAA bonds trading at 50 cents on the dollar, where spreads had gotten to over 1,000 basis points on highly liquid AAA bonds. We did see this to some degree during the oil collapse, when oil went to $26 a barrel and people were worried about credit defaults from energy companies. And we did see this in the beginning of COVID. Neither of those episodes were nearly as bad as the Great Financial Crisis. But those were stories where there were market disruptions that were impacted the market extraordinarily severely. What we're seeing now is the market continues to function. New deals come to market, but investors want to be rewarded with greater returns than they were 6 months ago. The CMBS market, other than those three windows of time that we saw, has been extraordinarily stable in its spread ranges. This is the first time we've seen really spread expansion during normal times in really two decades. Maybe some of our listeners will remind me of other times when this has happened, but I really can't think of it other than in times of real dislocation.
Yeah, so we did a segment last week talking about the single asset, single borrower issuance and kind of the explosion in that. I mean, do you think this is something that could become systemic to that asset class or issuance class, or is it just going to be, you know, bound to this one deal based on maybe the composition of the property location, some of the risk factors associated with that?
Well, Don Sheets told me this a long time ago, and it was great advice, that no markets move independent of any other markets, that during the energy blow up in 2015, the widening of spreads in the credit markets for loans to energy companies had this gravitational pull that pulled everything wider. And if conduit spreads are going wider, there's almost no way that SASB spreads can't go wider. They may outperform, and I think they will, the conduit market. They're a little bit more stable. They are that trophy market place. They're more predictable. So I don't think you'll see the same widening that you see in the conduit space. But I do think that gravitational pull and the fact that people can get better returns in conduit will drag those SASB spreads wider. Just a couple more data points here. I want to give our bond pricing team here some props. This would be Tom Kenny, who's been doing this for a long time for us, along with Lyle Chen and Bill Chen, who head up that group. They gave me their month-over-month numbers from April 30th to May 31st. And from their perspective, what they're showing is AAA spreads, long AAA spreads, 10-year bonds, wider by about 10 to 12 basis points month over month. So not as bad as what we saw in that bank series comparable. On the AA space, about 55 basis points. In the BBB minus space, close to 100 basis points at this point. So they are very consistent in their marks to what we're seeing from both the news reports and also new issue pricing.
Let's turn to the delinquency number, which we are publishing via Tripwire. And by the way, a little side note, happy anniversary, Tripwire, Manus and team.
Thank you. This is the 13th anniversary. I'm not sure what one gives for a 13th anniversary. You know, I think for 25th, isn't it gold? And for 50, it's diamond, or is it 75 that's diamond? I don't really know. 13, I would think, should be maybe a black cat or a
talisman,
a salt shaker.
Yeah. Evil eye bracelet.
Shaker, so you should throw the salt over your shoulder if you have bad luck. But yeah, it's been a real pleasure writing Tripwire. We started this in the throes of the Great Financial Crisis. And I was looking at some numbers last night. I think we're at about somewhere between 12 and 15,000 credit stories over the last 13 years, and I think about 3,500 market updates that we've done at 6:30 every morning. Turning to the delinquency numbers, another really nice improvement in the delinquency rate. The headline rate fell 37 basis points. It's now 3.14%, down from 3.51%. A year ago, the rate was almost double what it is now at 6.16%. I think it's now 22 out of the last 23 months we've seen improvement. So real wonderful numbers. A little inside baseball. Our headline number is made up of all of our CMBS loans. So it does include a smattering of loans that were made before the great financial crisis. That set continues to dwindle every month. If we were to remove that set altogether and look at only CMBS 2.0, 3.0 loans, the delinquency rate fell below 3% this month. Just a wonderful improvement for that market. I think more than any of us could have ever expected during the height of the COVID-19 pandemic. A couple property by property specific numbers. Lodging fell below 6% this month, 5.83 as of May. 100 basis points lower in the last 2 months, a function of more and more and more loans curing. You might recall that hotel delinquencies hit 25% during the summer of 2020. In the retail, another nice improvement. It fell below 7%. It is also down close to 100 basis points over the last 2 months. And there, what we're seeing is some of those loans in CMBS purgatory starting to slowly but surely get squeezed out of the system by way of curing or loan modifications.
Yeah, it's good to see the lodging sector to continue its continued improvement. I mean, down below 6%, that's not too far above historical norms. I mean, it's still significantly higher, but it's nothing compared to what it was. The one thing that I keep my eye on as we kind of go through this month over month, man, is the office number. I keep thinking that we're going to see that start to tick up, and we haven't. If you look at the last 3 months, it's hovered right around 1.6, 1.7%. So for all the discussion around work from home and all the stuff that even we've put out related to, you know, potential challenges in the office market, we're not seeing that translate, at least to this point, in terms of delinquency at the asset level.
Yeah, Martha referred to this in the open. How there'll be winners and losers in this space. And some of the losers will come from those cities with the long commutes, right? New York, Chicago, long, and I would add expensive commutes. I think a commuter railroad ticket in New York runs about $300 now per month. But I think this will be episodic. This will continue to play out. We did see that story 2 or 3 months ago with 1740 Broadway in New York, where Blackstone announced they were giving back keys. We have seen pockets of real weakness in downtown Chicago. And I do think that that will continue to play out, but it will play out over that long tail that we've referred to in the past. If a law firm has a lease that runs out to 2026, they're not defaulting on that lease. But in 2025, that notice may come, which is either we are not renewing or, you know, we want to take 40% less space than we took before. And I do think that in those upper Midwest and cold and expensive places, we will see episodic defaults over time. You'll get there, Lonnie. You'll get your office distressed before all is said and done.
Let's dig into some of the property sectors that have some news to report. Let's start with retail. There was an interesting story. We were just talking about how retail has bounced back. And Lonnie, given that you're in Texas, probably better than anyone can talk to us about the opportunities in Texas, especially with food and beverage retail owners there.
Yeah, so we spent a lot of time talking about the winners and losers across different asset classes. And here in Texas, we've had such an influx of net in-migration. I mean, there's been so many people move here. There's definitely been some clear segments of the market that have been winners. And I think food and beverage, restaurant owner operator space in Texas has been one of the benefactors there. So there was an article in RE Business online this week that actually highlighted some of the impacts to that food and beverage marketplace here in Texas. And it's across DFW, Austin, and Houston were the three cities that were noted in the article. But basically, Class B, Class C product on the market is almost non-existent. Restaurants that closed right during the pandemic or at the onset of the pandemic have all been, you know, backfilled with secondary users. And there's been a lot of downstream implications. So one of the quotes from the article, Austin specific, said, "We typically have annual turnover of 60 to 80 restaurants per year, not just going out of business, but leases expiring or voluntarily deciding to close. However, now, you know, a few months into COVID, 65 had closed. 180 days later, there was an all-time low supply of second-generation space. Immediate bounce back for those, you know, spaces to be backfilled is kind of unprecedented." So some of the downstream impacts that they've seen is increased time in lease negotiations. So a lot of architects are not taking on new clients because they're overwhelmed or understaffed, which just increases the friction to get a deal done. So in this case, typical lease negotiations, you know, 4 to 6 months, maybe now are 6 to 8 months. Landlords are facing the brunt of increased tenant improvement costs and challenges related to getting materials to build out spaces. And so typical TIs that were $30 to $35 a square foot pre-pandemic won't cut what this market requires. And so, you know, there's been some challenges there. And then obviously this is not F&B specific, but labor costs are very real. So operators are increasing weekly wages, offering sign-on bonuses and retention bonuses for employees that stay. You know, it used to be 12 months. Now they're, you know, getting retention bonuses if you've been there 3 months or longer. So it's a very interesting time. If you read, there's some other stuff out there. A lot of chain restaurants have targeted, you know, Texas, Florida, and a few other markets to where they're really landing and expanding. So good news for the retail sector, even though it was the highest delinquency percentage on our delinquency tracker that we just talked about. For this particular subset of retail, Texas has really been a green spot for the marketplace.
So Lonnie, what is your go-to casual dining and what's your go-to fast food now that you've given us that update? What is the, where are the Hendry's, you know, where will you find them on a Friday night?
Yeah, so on the fast food side, like you can't be a Texan if your fast food go-to isn't Whataburger. So Whataburger is definitely the fast food go-to, even when it's like 30 minutes in the drive-thru line. So it's kind of a misnomer because it's not really fast food because they don't make it till you order it. And everyone in the Whataburger line likes to customize, which they allow you to put whatever you want on every burger, which for me is not a plus because I get mine meat and cheese only, plain and dry. As you guys know, I'm pretty much a plain vanilla and usually order off the kids menu. So added flexibility is not a bonus for me. But Whataburger kind of on the fast food side. Casual dining, you know, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe Chili's, something like that, which is not great. So I'm not the best person to talk to about, you know, eating or eating habits. I mean, in fact, you mentioned my Winnie the Pooh PJs here, Manus. They're actually about two sizes too small because I eat so poorly. And this morning, since we were doing the podcast early, I was going to get up and do some push-ups. And I did about three, and then I couldn't stand up because my arms were jello. So, yeah, I'm probably not the best to talk about food or exercise at this point.
Maybe we can get Haley to hit up Whataburger for a 30-second sponsorship now that Blondie has given, like, the real blessing there.
I think we just gave them one.
Well, hey, listen, one more shout-out to the Whataburger fam out there. Like, my middle son, for his birthday last year, I had a Whataburger-themed party for him. Like, I got the Whataburger beach towels and the Whataburger swim trunks. So we're pretty hardcore around here.
Wow. All right, we have a couple credit stories in retail.
So we'll run through these quickly. We mentioned a second ago about some of these loans in CMBS purgatory coming to maybe a point where they get resolved. The first one, we put out a trading alert this morning. The Grease Ridge Center, which I believe is in upstate New York, this backs a $62 million loan that has been in purgatory for quite some time. Recent special servicer notes indicate that a modification has been agreed to. The details have not come out in full. We're trying to obtain them, but the comments do point to the fact that a loan extension and an AB note split will be part of the new terms. Why is this meaningful? Well, this particular loan makes up 70% of the collateral behind a 2010 CMBS deal, and that deal will have its cash flows change dramatically if this loan is extended and an A-B note split comes to pass. This property was valued at $147 million in 2010. It was been lowered twice since then, most recently to $45 million. So about $17 million in negative equity here, and yet the borrower is still looking to try to hold on to this thing. So that is one loan that could get resolved soon. A second one, this is the mall at Turtle Creek. This is in Arkansas. May remittance comments indicate that the special servicer is now looking at a note sale. In the past, the special servicer had been looking to foreclose on the asset first. So this is another asset that could see a near-term resolution. The property backs about $60 million in $63 million in CMBS debt across 2002-2016 deals. Both are part of CMBX 10. And then lastly, a quick hit. There were news reports this week that up to 100 Sears Hometown stores are slated for closure. Sears Hometown is not the department store side of Sears. There are very few Sears department stores left. I think it's under 30 at this point. Sears Hometown was a spinoff where franchisees could take on the Sears name and sell appliances and other things through a licensing agreement with Sears. Now it turns out that 100 of these things will be closing. They tend to be located in really rural, small towns. The stores are usually less than 15,000 feet, if not even smaller, sometimes 8,000 to 10,000 square feet. And many of these will go by the wayside very soon. So a couple of them touch CMBS, but only very small exposures in terms of loan size.
Yeah, I've actually shopped at some Sears Hometown stores, Manus. They were kind of like the Ace Hardware of the home store. So if you needed some crazy fitting for your washing machine or whatever, you could go to the Sears Hometown and get it. So it's, you know, they definitely served a little niche in the market. It'll be interesting to see how the market reacts. Small footprint. In fact, the one that I used to go to was in a shopping center. So, you know, not a very large footprint at all. So on the Arkansas mall loan, you know, it looks like they hadn't made a payment on this property in over a year and basically been delinquent for the last 2 years. So we'll see how successful they are with the note sale on that deal. There's been no activity there for some time.
Let's turn to office. We talked a little bit about it at the beginning, the Elon Musk memo that hit the Twitterverse pretty hard, where he said, you got to come to work or else. And it kind of reopened this whole debate about whether we need to be in the office or we can work remotely. And it's taken up a few cycles where people are debating that once again.
There's no mincing of words here. He says remote work is no longer acceptable. Anyone who wishes to do remote work must be in the office for a minimum of 40 hours per week or depart Tesla. And then the last one here, people that think going to work is an antiquated concept should pretend to work somewhere else. So I don't think it's a very black and white approach to work from home from Elon Musk and the Tesla crew.
Well, it reminds me of two things. Back in the day when investment bankers used to work 90 hours a week, Merrill Lynch, it was probably the analyst who created these shirts. I'm sure that corporate would not give these out, but there was one that said, it's not just a job, it's two, right? To take off on the old Marines, it's not just a job, it's an adventure line. And the other was, if you're not willing to come to work on Saturday, don't show up for work on Sunday. Right? That was their mantra there too. So
it's heartwarming.
What's your take on this, Martha?
Well, you know, I think when we were talking about this, we have to point out that they are a manufacturing firm, right? So, you know, I suppose it's different if you're a knowledge worker and can work wherever because you can be on a computer and still get your work done. But there's something to be said for innovation, manufacturing industry, where people have to gather and collaborate and design things and build things. So, you know, it's a message that obviously some people didn't welcome. But in some industries, I think it's a message that needed to be said. You mentioned, Manus, the discussion in the Wall Street Journal this week that looked at analysis with Castle Systems. You know, the battle of getting the worker back is they just don't want the long commute at this point. They're willing to go back and they want to go back. But if they got to be on a train for an hour and a half to 2 hours, you know, that doesn't sound very compelling.
You know, I just think that people's eyes were open these last 2 years. I think that nobody really did the math, right? Days are 24 hours long. And if you're on that train for an hour each way, right, 1/12 of your day and 1/8 of your waking time is spent on that train. And I think that once people realized that and it really came home to roost, I think that that really changed the way people thought about this. And it's the reason I am moderately bearish on the office market in certain cities, because I do think that getting people to come back 5 days a week is really a non-starter at most places other than maybe trading firms. And there was an interesting story again from Commercial Mortgage Alert last week about Twitter's headquarters in San Francisco. We've written about that headquarters a couple times. The leases are not super long out there. Some end in 2026, some end in 2028. There's a big CMBS loan backed by that particular property that we were somewhat concerned about. What happens to this thing if Twitter doesn't renew, or imagine Elon Musk does take over Twitter and flips it into a homeless shelter, as he kind of hinted at a month or so ago. But Commercial Mortgage Alert was reporting that the owners of that property are looking to refinance the loan at a value that is considerably higher than the value that it was 5 years ago. So none of this apparently is impacting the value of that particular San Francisco downtown trophy office. So we'll see if they get the kind of valuation that they were looking for in that article. And by the way, you know, look to CMA for some of these stories. They're a terrific publication. Other office stories we saw this week, there's some green shoots and some crabgrass in there. I'll start with the green shoots. We did see a report this morning that Regions in Atlanta had re-upped for 100,000 square feet in that town at the Regions Center at 1180 Peachtree, if I'm not mistaken. That's a sizable building in downtown Atlanta. We did see another one in downtown San Jose. Bridge Bank extended its lease on its headquarters at 55 Almaden, 52,000 square feet there. The landlord is KBS, and the extension is for 7 years. That is from The Real Deal, and the piece says San Jose has seen a stubbornly high vacancy rate. So good news and some green shoots for that particular area. Turning to crabgrass, more crabgrass than we'd like. In Raleigh, Durham, Axios put out a piece last week talking about how vacant office space in that area has really swelled. They talked about six or seven particular entities that are giving back space there. I always see Raleigh, Durham as a real outlier on the positive side in terms of absorption, especially in life science in the last decade. It was a little bit shocking to see a negative story about that market. Advanced Auto was one of the organizations looking to give back space, and there were several others in that story. In San Francisco, this is from the biz journals out there, real estate platform Qualia lists its headquarters for sublet at Salesforce West. And in Boston, the sole tenant at 400 Atlanta, which is Golston and Storrs, or a law firm, they've been at that property for a long time. They will be leaving 400 Atlantic. That backs a $25 million CMBS loan that makes up 2% of a 2014 deal, CMBX 8, and they are the sole tenant there. We do have a couple of other office stories. Do we have time for that?
Go for it.
All right. I'm going to let Lonnie in a minute do the Hartford one, if that's okay, if he's got that open. But I'll throw three out there that I think we're all somewhat concerning and for people to keep a look at over the horizon for things that may pop up in the future. The first one is from the St. Louis Business Journal. Gloria Lloyd does a great job covering that market. She was reporting that Centene has terminated two St. Louis area leases. These don't back CMBS debt, But in the story, she noted that Centene, in their most recent earnings announcement, said that they would look to cut their office space by up to 50% to reduce costs as a nod to shareholders that costs had gotten too high. Centene has tons of offices around the U.S., many back CMBS loans, something to watch over the next year or two to see if they pull back. A second one, this comes from The Real Deal. Broadcom and VMware looking at merging. Broadcom made a $61 billion offer for the firm. The Real Deal points out that the combined entity would have 2 million square feet in the Bay Area that might be ripe for a repositioning and a downsizing to gain efficiency should they merge. Something to keep an eye on. And lastly, we talked about this a couple months ago about mortgage originators downsizing. PennyMac recently noted that they were looking to lay off about 600 employees. They have several offices in the LA area that are potential candidates for reduction in space, including one on Agora Road in Agora Hills. That lease ends in 2024. So these are some of the stories that we're looking at, keeping our eye on as the economy shifts.
Yeah, so you mentioned the Hartford office story, man. So we'll jump onto that real quick. This is an interesting story because it has a creative hook for luring new tenants. So this came from the Hartford Business Journal. Shelburne Global has begun offering up to 2 months free rent at its Hartford apartment properties in return for office leases with terms of 3 years or more. So basically, if you lease some office space from them, they'll give you 2 months free rent in one of their apartment communities if you sign a lease there. So these incentives will kick in on leases as small as 5,000 square foot. So all you have to do is lease a 5,000 square foot office for 3 years or more. You get 2 months free in the apartment complex that they own. Some of the offices in this incentive program back CMBS loans. So we'll give you a quick rundown of those. One of them is One Financial Plaza, which is about 4% of the bank 2019-BN1 deal. That's part of CMBX 13. That office building has more than 620,000 square feet, with top tenant being Travelers. That one's really healthy. In 2021, had debt service coverage ratio 2.4x, and occupancy was about 90%. Another building is a $27.1 million loan at 100 Pearl Street, which is part of a 2015 deal, 275,000 square foot office. This one here is doing okay, 1.56x debt service coverage. Occupancy though was only 79%. And then they have one other one here, 20 Church Street, which is $25.5 million loan. This one here is about 420,000 square foot, had 1.67 debt service coverage ratio. And that one was 60 days delinquent as of June. So, you know, Hartford coming into the office market with some new incentives. I can say from my days back when I was a young lad in the CRE space, leasing apartments and managing apartment communities, you know, we were not shy about doing some leasing incentives. So do a 12-month lease and you get a, you know, at that time, like a 32-inch TV, which was a really big deal. One time we actually gave away a cruise to one of our tenants. So, you know, interesting, but I've never seen an office landlord offering a free apartment rent in exchange for a new lease. So maybe this is the start of a new trend.
Well, I'll throw this out to you guys. This is in the, what would you do for a Klondike bar category? What would you do for 2 months of free rent in a Northeast city?
My son wants the latest Apple iPhone. Have you seen how much those are?
How much those go for now?
Like $1,000.
Yeah, if you get the large memory one, they're about $2,000.
So how about that? Could I get that?
There you go. I just told Simon, our CFO, and you know, kind of cut a deal there. So you just need to get a small office a few blocks away in Hartford, right? And instead of offering, you know, getting that apartment there, you'll get an iPhone out of it.
Yeah, we know how Simon feels about Connecticut. I'm hoping he doesn't see this. We may be moving our corporate office to Hartford for some free rent. So we've got to keep this one on the down low internally.
It was marginally acceptable when they had the Whalers, but now that the Whalers have become the Hurricane, it's not, you know, it's become less desirable.
We had one more story here that we can cover. Post Brothers, Philadelphia-based development firm, has made an entrance into the Washington, D.C. market with a $228 million acquisition of a two-building office complex. The kicker on this is that they plan to convert those offices to apartments. This was according to the Commercial Observer. So JBG Smith sold Universal North and South, two Class B office buildings. They encompass an entire city block near DuPont Circle. JBG became the owner of the properties as part of its legacy Vornado deal. So back in 2017, they acquired or inherited the assets via the merger. These are at 1825 and 1875 Connecticut Avenue Northwest. Two-building complex consists of Universal North, which is a 12-story building, about 368,000 square feet, and Universal South, which is a 10-story building, about 291,000 square foot. At the time of the sale, the two buildings had occupancies of 40% and 98%, respectively, and can accommodate an additional 73,000 square foot by right density. Interesting takeaway here, JBG Smith, CEO Matt Kelly, noted company's capital allocation strategy is to shift the majority of its portfolio to multifamily and away from the office sector. So more to come on this. I know we've talked a little bit about how difficult it is sometimes to convert office buildings to multifamily, but it looks like in this instance, Post Brothers feels like it's acquired a couple of office assets that they can make the transition over to apartment use.
Okay, let's turn to shout outs. We had Riley C. send us, Manus, and I hope he wasn't profiling us, but he told us that the Top Gun sequel, which opened last week, brought in about $124 million in ticket sales. And actually one of, I think, the pandemic's, post-pandemic's best opening for a movie. He pointed out that the people that went to the movie actually had a high percentage of folks that were older than 35. And I don't know, I was wondering if he was profiling us.
Well, we're easy to profile. You know, the things that we talk about put us in really obscure 70s and 80s and 90s trivia references all the time. So you listen to two podcasts and you kind of could guess our collective ages or our individual ages, as the case may be. I love the fact that people are going back to the movies. Usually going to the movies also involves spending money on food and getting some fast food, maybe some Whataburger before the show. You know, these movie theaters have been suffering. They are anchors for, you know, bigger properties as well. You know, retail landlords have been hurting for the last 2 years. So, you know, I think that's a wonderful green shoot. I hope to get to see the movie. I also want to see Doctor Strange and a few other things. You know, my kids always tease me that, you know, I'm the ultimate movie crier. Like, even things that you would think that shouldn't possibly make you cry make me get all weepy at the end. So I got to see if Top Gun makes me cry.
Oh, yeah, that harkens me back to my wee years. Anne L., who is our friend over in London, is celebrating the Queen's Jubilee this week. But the reason she reached out to us is she had some name suggestions for Lonnie's startup, and I thought they were rather clever. We might have to trademark these. Debt Default and Beyond, Rating Rabbit, Wrap and Rent Roll, Underwriting Uncovered, and Dicey Dodgy DSCR. That's cute.
Like it.
Rachel B. from Tampa is a loyal listener and says we have the most interesting Siri podcast out there. I'm not sure what sample set we're being selected from. That's interesting. And she might be providing us some market color in an upcoming pod. And one of our newest fans, Michael C., was interested, Haley, if we were going to drop this pod tonight for the evening commute.
We also had one from Joel who referenced Lonnie's speaking of me in a bathing suit a couple of episodes ago. And he said, you know, he can't unthink that image anymore. So please no more references of that type anymore. Let's stick to golfing images. That comes from Joel as well. And I mentioned Donut Shorts before, reached out to us several times with some great stories, and thank you for that.
And a programming note, CREFC June 2022. We will be there, and we have a couple booths 2 and 2B. 2 or 2B. I kind of want to quote a very famous writer there. We'll also be in meeting room 1010, which happens to be on the 10th floor. I know, surprising. We're also going to be presenting at the Portfolio Lender Survey panel and hosting some live interviews for the pod. We'll be walking around trying to get folks to give us some ideas of what they think is going to happen in the coming months. But if you've got any questions, you could shoot us an email in advance.
So for those that have never been there before, this is a semi-annual event. It's at the Marriott Marquis in New York. We will be there with t-shirts. Martha and I will be there. Lonnie, are you going to be there?
Yeah, not decided at this point. I'm in New York the week before, so it's going to be a tough back-to-back if I make it. But sounds really interesting. It's making me want to be there, so we'll see what we can do about that.
So this is for predominantly CMBS types, commercial real estate borrowers, lenders, issuers, and so forth. They've been doing this for, I guess, 25 years or so. It's a good conference. They do the January one in Miami. And if you do attend this, by all means, come by our booth and we could talk Allman Brothers, New York Rangers hockey, fast food options, anything else you want to cover is on the table.
And with that, we'll close. Thanks to our producer, Haley Keene. Join us next week as we look at what's happened during the week and how it may be impacting you. If you have a question or a comment, send your email to podcast@trepp.com and subscribe to the podcast with your favorite provider. Thanks for listening and stay well.
All right.